You were listening to the 1 Million Cups of Appleton. We are a group designed to educate, engage, and inspire entrepreneurs in central Wisconsin and beyond.
So welcome everyone to 1 Million Cups Appleton. Great to be here today and see so many familiar faces. I think all of us on here know our presenter today, local Eric Walterkins with Kings Ridge Media, giving us an update. Thanks for volunteering, Eric, to present today and tell us more about your business. And can't wait to see how things are going. So take it from here.
Thank you, Andrew. So basically, this is going to be a little bit different than what you would normally expect from a 1 Million Cups podcast, because what I'm going to do is take back, well, 2 years ago, I originally came on to 1 Million Cups to present KRM Wholesale, which is a wholesale division of my Amazon selling business. So for about 13 years, I've sold books and CDs on Amazon. I was looking for a way to generate income that didn't come from directly from Amazon, but rather from some other source. Because as we probably all know, having all your income come from one source in a business is not a very good idea. So I set up this program, which is called KRM Wholesale, which enabled other Amazon sellers to work with me, tap into my supplier network, get items for their stores to sell, buy them at a discounted price, and then they could sell them on their store. So I originally probably came on in July of 2019, presented this idea, and I launched the business in September of that year. So I'm a little behind on my slide, so just bear with me. But that's basically what I just said. So in this experience of launching this, I learned a number of things that I think could help many entrepreneurs in their business. And at the time when I first launched this, I envisioned that this was going to be a service that was exclusively used for by people that were selling books and media on Amazon today. When I launched the business and I started trying to advertise to those people, I realized that 98% of the people that sell books on Amazon are complete hobbyists. And there is only a very small fraction of them that actually have a real business. So to go to them and try to turn them on to a completely new and completely different way of doing things was a huge struggle, because most of them just looked at it and said, A, I'm not looking to buy 100 books at a time. I go into a thrift store and I buy 3 books at a time and I'm happy with that. And B, this was just not a way that anybody else was selling books at today, even today. And at that time when I launched this, nobody was really doing this type of thing where everything was sourced through suppliers. So what I learned from that, though, was there is a huge amount of people out there that are very interested in the idea of selling on Amazon, are not interested in learning how to sell on Amazon, but are willing to put money towards the idea of having their own business on Amazon. And that became basically my target customer, was somebody that had capital that they wanted to invest in something and saw Amazon as a great opportunity to do it. So it totally pivoted on the type of customers I had, was going after. When I first set this up, like I said in the last slide, I kind of set it up. My main purpose of this was to separate myself from Amazon, get income coming from a different source. And after I got this up and had it running for a while, I learned that there was another huge advantage to this business that I had never even thought about when I was coming up with the idea. And that advantage was, this was a huge, huge asset and cash flow in my business. With selling books on Amazon, you buy 1,000 books and you put them on Amazon, 10% of them will sell a month for 8 months or something like that. And with this model, I was literally buying 1,000 books and selling them all as soon as they arrived in my warehouse. So I was not waiting around for 6 months to get that money back. Yes, the profit I was making on those books was not as great as what I would if I waited the 6 months, but it was basically a turn and burn where the money went out and it came right back in within 30 days. So it just increased and improved my business that much. It allowed me to build the Amazon side more, because I had way more cash flow by having this money come in. certain point, I reached a point where basically I looked at it as this whole wholesale business was buying all of the inventory. And then my profit just came in from what I sold on Amazon. And are we stuck? Why are you not switching slides? Okay, let's try this again. There we go. So after year one of my launch, I had pretty much blown away what I expected to make. When I sat down and I kind of projected what everything would look like after year one, I had found that I'd pretty much blown away what my expectations were. And coming in to year two, I was on a track where I think after I would have tripled the sales from year one in the second year, which currently we are in the second year, I should clarify if that's unclear. So, but then part of selling on Amazon is every sort of, we'll say 3 to 4 years, Amazon likes to change something that screws everything up for everybody. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, this was the year that they were going to do that. And I kind of thought, because this wholesale business was so many different sellers, that there was not a policy change they could make that would affect everything. But they found a way, and they did make a policy change that completely derailed everything for this. So basically what they did is they introduced this thing called restock limits. And what restock limits were, in a short end, I mean, I could talk about this for like 3 hours, but what restock limits was Amazon has a system where they say whatever you send in it. So everything that I was doing at this point in time was sending stuff into Amazon warehouses. And they would look at what you were sending into warehouses, and they would decide what they wanted more of. And based on what you were sending in, they would give you an arbitrary number that said you can send in so many more items based on, because we know we want these, this, and this item or whatever. And because books, any book that holds profit right now, unless it's like brand new, hot off the presses, are considered long tail items, which means they don't sell 1,000 copies in a month. They sell maybe 100 copies in a year. So inevitably, every book that has any sort of profit does not show up on these restock reports. So it basically derailed any bookseller from being able to send inventory into Amazon. They stripped everybody down to such a low level that it wasn't even worth sending books into it anymore. So, and when they drop these things, they happen overnight without any warning, and they send out an email saying, this gone into effect, and they don't tell you anything about it to explain what it's doing, how they're coming up with these numbers they're making, what you can do to improve it, which for a bookseller in this, with these limits, there isn't anything you can do except stop selling books. So basically overnight, this happened in about May of this year, overnight, my sales in this wholesale business went from here down to nothing, because everybody, all my wholesale clients were now unable to send anything into Amazon. And we had to figure out, okay, what are we going to do next? So after, took about a month and a half, but I came up with a pivot plan. And what we did is a lot of these clients were just basically investing into it. So they didn't have warehouses. They didn't have the resources because yes, we couldn't send things into Amazon, but you could ship things out yourself if you wanted to. So the pivot plan was to shift everybody over to shipping out their own products. But the challenge with that was a number of my clients didn't have the warehouse to store the products. They didn't have this to store the products. So my initial plan was to just start housing my wholesale clients' product in my warehouse and shipping it out. And once I had put up all the shelves, I figured out I want the space that's in my warehouse for myself. So I ended up reaching out to another very large wholesale client of mine who had just gotten a new warehouse. And I said, hey, would you be interested in doing this? You know, we'll get the product into you. You just have to list it. And as the items ship, you ship it out for my clients, and then you can charge them a fee on the back end for that. So we pivoted to that model. Slowly we got, I would say pretty much anybody that was not a bookseller natively, was not selling books before they met me, pivoted to this model. The ones that were booksellers, because there were some that were booksellers, most booksellers are still are still trying to fight the battle that they can make FBA work. They haven't realized that it's just not viable to build a real business on FBA as a bookseller anymore. So there, many of them dropped off, or because they just couldn't get enough books, because the only books they were going to buy were the ones that were going to sell in 2 days. And there's just only so many of those books out there. So we lost a lot of those, but a lot of the big ones came and pivoted to this model. And so I've now probably had that fully in effect in June. And since then, we've been building it up. And I'm very happy to say that it looks like starting next month, we should be back to where we were prior to this all happening. So, and that's basically it. So we're back on track to hit year two, my expectation for year two sales. And within 2 months, I think we'll be making on a monthly average what we were making during the peak at the beginning of the year before all this happened. So that's what I got. Anybody have questions?
Thanks for the update, Eric. Super cool to hear that you're back on track. And it sounds like through this, you're just like becoming less dependent on Amazon, right? I mean, like that's essentially like, what are your dependencies with them now? Like you, since you do all your inventory management, your own shipping, like it's really just using them as a sales platform, right?
Yeah. And there's still a heavy dependency on them, of course, but it's so many good things have surfaced from this, because I just realized before, when you send stuff into an Amazon warehouse, they put a time limit on it. It can only be there for 12 months. It can only be there for 6 months or whatever. When you're housing your own inventory, it can sit there for 5 years. So we can be a lot more aggressive about buying inventory now. So something that I know maybe only sells once a year, but when it does sell, it sells for $80 or something like that. I can sit on it. I can bring that inventory in now, which before I would never even touch it, and just leave it sit there until that right customer comes along to buy it. So yeah, it has decreased the dependency on Amazon. I also feel much better, because when Amazon does make these changes, it generally is directly always affecting FBA, which is sending the stuff into the warehouse. That's where the majority of these changes are. On the side of housing your own inventory in your warehouse, they haven't made a dramatic change to that in probably 10 years. So it's a much more comfortable place to be, because they are still there and they can still make these changes, but the years have shown that they're just kind of leaving that business alone.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congrats, man. I mean, that's a huge pivot this year to make, and yeah, awesome work.
Yeah, I can tell you that it was scary.
Yeah, so. I remember the week that you had this happen, and I think we were on a phone call or something, and I was like, shit, man. Sounds like a rough week.
Yeah, but it was a very rough week.
Yeah, so. I believe it. Mike, I see your mic is unmuted. Do you have a comment?
I guess if there's anyone I can think of that I don't know everyone really well on this call, but Eric, of Eric and Tracy, who can pivot when they get thrown something challenging like that. No surprise that y'all figured it out. Interesting to see how you did. I just know you this space. That's amazing. My caution or question is, so while that was painful for that to happen from Amazon, is there some wisdom to be gained from that, though, in terms of how they're looking at their business model and realizing, inventory space, floor space has a value, right? And so for lower profit items, because it's all about the mighty dollar for them, right?
Right.
Generally. So they realize they just wasn't making the money. So is there some lesson to your point? Okay, so you can make $80 on an item, but what if you're overall, you look at the track, what's the carry cost and blah, 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 blah. And it turns out, well, my profit on that ends up being negative. So I'm assuming you take some of that into consideration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because you're not just carrying inventory kind of forever because there's a cost, right? And so.
Yeah. And the way I view it is that if I'm never going to expand the amount of inventory space I need. So it comes down to, I'm not going to start throwing items out just because I think the cost of storing them is too high. because to put a book on a shelf, it doesn't cost me anything. My rent is the same now in my warehouse that it's always been. And it would, well, I mean, obviously rent raises, but you know, it's kind of a almost a fixed cost at this point. So until there's space issues, yeah, maybe in the future, I wouldn't carry that book that I had talked about. But for now, to me, it's a huge opportunity to figure out which of these books will move. Yes, you're right. Some of them might not ever move. And some of them might be, it's not worth keeping it around for 5 years when I could have 10 more books on that sitting in that spot on that shelf that are going to make me 10 times as much money or whatever. But that's just one of the examples, because that opens up the catalog of books to me by, I mean, a huge amount. You're talking, we were probably, there's 33 million books on Amazon. We were probably playing with maybe 20,000 books before. And that number is probably doubled or tripled of what we can bring into our warehouses. And none of the books have, it's those books that you do hold for multiple years that might not sell or might only sell one or two to three times. That's where the real profit is, because you pick that book up for $2 and you put it on a shelf for 3 years. It's well worth it when it sells for $80. And the whole concept behind selling books is that you have this big bank of books like that, and just know that, yeah, maybe this one's not going to sell for 3 years, but that one's been sitting there for 3 years and is about to sell or something like that. So you're always selling the same amount of books every month. It's just, there's no way to predict which block of books is going to sell this month, if that makes sense.
Okay. So you gotta have the right mix is what you're saying. You gotta have a volume, and then and without it, if you're not big enough scaled, then you will have a problem, because you won't sell anything. You couldn't sell something for months at a time, but you've got enough of a mix that it.
Yeah. You're still going to bring in books that are going to sell really fast, but it's really powerful to have that bank of those really high profit books that only sell periodically, because when they do sell, they're a huge pay. And actually, I have a friend that the books that we've been talking about, that's all he focuses on. He just has enough of them and he literally sells through like $100,000 worth of books a month. And it's just that he has so many of these rare books that he knows a certain block of them will sell every month, and it doesn't matter. He just has to make sure that his numbers, that he keeps them in stock, and they just keep going.
Eric, can you just share for everyone, like, one of those books, like, what is a percentage of profit on that? I remember you shared some numbers with me once, and I was blown away by, like, the percentage. You buy it for one price, you sell it for another, and it's like,
yeah. I mean, so to give you an idea, like, on the really good end, I buy books all day for $3, $4, $5, and they sell for $60, $70. I mean, I probably sell multiple of those in a day,
which now, is like 4,000% profit.
Yes.
That's what's crazy about what you're talking about is Amazon also, like, the percentage that they make on an FBA for that is significantly less than you. So a square foot in your warehouse, you can afford to hold on to that book for 10 years and still make tons of money on it.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, where Amazon can't. You know, Amazon's floor space, a square foot, is valued so much more.
Well,
other like the price per square foot is valued so much more because you have all these FBA, you know, businesses competing for it.
Right. And the way it was always described to me, the number one reason why Amazon does this is that they can say, we don't have this book in stock, and we know that five people want this book, but we also have this roll of toilet paper over here that we don't have in stock right now. And right now, 7,000 people want a roll of that toilet paper. Well, what's Amazon going to give precedence to? It doesn't matter the profit margin. They're all about the customer, and they want to solve the problem of making the 7,000 customers happy and not the five customers with the book. So, and that's why books are not viable. And with Amazon's warehouses, their whole intention has always been that you have like a 30 to 60 day turnover on all your inventory with what you send into them. Well, with books, that's not possible, because the books that you could do that with have zero profit in them whatsoever, because there's so many copies of them out there.
Yeah, it's interesting. Tyler, I see your mic's unmuted.
Yeah, I had a few questions for you. One, as you made this pivot, the first question in my mind was, when you went from, I presume FBA is fulfilled by Amazon?
Correct.
Okay. So when you made that pivot to then doing self-fulfillment through the wholesaler, did that change Prime shipping, where customers then had to pay, or do they always pay for shipping with books?
No.
Your model, or how did that work?
We completely lost Prime shipping in this.
And with that, have you seen that affect any sales at all? Because I know, well, I'm one who, if it doesn't ship Prime, then I'm probably not going to buy it.
Totally understandable. And actually, no, it did not. Because so when with books, when you sell things Prime and you sell things not Prime, there's a whole different way to source. So in all honesty, because of this pivot, I changed the way the books I'm buying today are completely different than what I bought when I was doing Prime. And actually, in the end, what happened was, what I see my sell-through rate as being roughly the same as it was when I was doing Prime. It's just different books that I'm selling now, because it's just a different way. So basically, when you sell Prime, you target the Prime price. Right. You don't care about what everybody else is selling it at. You only care what Prime sellers are selling it at. When you do merchant fulfilled, you ignore Prime price and you just look at what the overall market is selling it at, and you try to be the lowest price. So it's just a completely different way of sourcing. And by changing up the sourcing method, everything just kind of worked out to be the same.
Gotcha. Another question I had then was, do you purchase directly through publishers, or
no?
Where are your sources that you find stuff at?
The number one, this is going to be the one that's going to, you ready? Everybody's head's just going to explode. So my suppliers are other Amazon sellers. Figure that one out. So basically, I have relationships with probably two of the largest Amazon booksellers out there right now. And so they allow me to tap into their inventory, and it seems like it wouldn't work. But the thing is that these companies process through so many books and so many, they end up with, and the way their software works is their software looks at how many books they'll sell of a particular copy in 1 year. It just kind of predicts a number. And then it also predicts how many they expect will come in throughout the year and stuff like that. So as they go through these books, if they hit a certain metric and they say, we don't need another copy of this book, it doesn't matter if that book's profitable or not. They just throw it off to the side. And I get to pick from all of that stuff that they've decided that they have too much of, basically. And it sounds weird, but with the fact that these people are processing through millions of books a day, it leaves you with a very nice pile of stuff that you can then source for yourself.
Right. No, it's the exact reason it does make sense, because there's some businesses that just go through so much volume that then smaller volume businesses kind of get to pick up the high profit, low volume that they throw out. That's why you can go behind like a Target or a Walmart and find perfectly good, brand new in the package stuff that they're selling so much that it doesn't matter to them.
Yeah. And if you know, like retail arbitrage, it's the same reason why retail arbitrage works. You go into a Walmart and buy stuff and then sell it on Amazon. Well, that doesn't make any sense, but it works. So, and it's the same concept. Yeah, exactly.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. Those are my questions.
I'm going to jump in. Tyler, I like where you went with that. Eric, with the fulfillment being in-house instead of FBA, do you have an opportunity to go cross-platform now? Could you do an eBay with that?
I kind of left that off the presentation, but we are doing the eBay thing. So, okay. And at the beginning of this year, I had $0 in sales on eBay, and we've gotten that up to around $2,000 to $3,000 right now a month. So that is definitely a huge opportunity. And being with books, everything right now I'm doing on eBay is just with the CD side of things. I don't know. I just haven't turned the books on, and I don't know if I'll be able to, because eBay limits how much I can sell. But with the books, there's a ton of different sites out there that you can at least tap into and try to sell them. I haven't really looked too much into that as of yet, because you, once you do that, you have to find the right software to manage that, so that when something sells on Amazon, it gets pulled off of A-Books. And the reason why I'm hesitant right now to do that is because most of these platforms charge you a commission, and I don't really want to pay a commission on all my Amazon sales to pick up like 10% of sales from all these other venues. So, but at one point in time, and I have since lost this software, I did have a software that was kind of like worked around that. So you didn't have to connect your Amazon store to these platforms, and this software would just do it for you automatically, which eliminated having to pay the fees to Amazon. So if I get that back up and running, yes, I'll probably push into exactly that, but that's kind of more down the road yet. I want to get the wholesale thing back up and running and where I want it to be, make sure that's all working good. Make sure I don't have, because right now I have a client that calls me every month and says, I need more books. So I'm trying to get him to the point where he stops calling me every month, and then I will focus on stuff like that. So I
think that's, so how you're buying the books from other sellers, I think you're becoming, you know, one of those big players that you've got enough work on your plate that it can spill off to the next person that wants to take some of these other avenues, you know, and you don't get as much profit, like you said, but you've got some cash flow coming in, and that other person can figure out the softwares and the, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And this client that I'm talking about, like, he's going to shoot way beyond me in no time. He might even already be there, because he's that guy. He's the guy that wants to figure out, you know, everything's got to be $1 million business. And that's just not really the way my mind works. I'm good with my simplicity, I guess. So can't believe Tracy doesn't have any questions.
Tracy built the business. Yeah.
No, that's Frankie.
Yeah, or the cat. Yeah, the cat.
Yeah. I guess I'm curious, because you talk a little bit about the history and short-term vision. So I'm just curious to hear a little bit of, what's your long-term vision? Like, what, where do you want this to be in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years?
Oh, that's a great question.
South America. 10 years, he's going to be in South America somewhere.
Yes. Ten years, I will be in South America.
In 10 years, Amazon will own everything and there'll be no other sellers. That's fine.
So no, right now, my long-term goal with this is, so the large client I've talked about, he natively started doing non-media items. So he was a huge seller on Amazon, but he was doing all sorts, everything but books, CDs, or anything like that, right? So in the last year, I convinced him to pretty much mimic what I'm doing with books with his wholesale suppliers. So now he's got a small amount of clients that he goes to and, you know, does the same thing I do with my books. He sends them a list, places orders for them, sends everything in. There, that stuff you can still do FBA, because that stuff will show up on restock limit reports. So you can kind of grow your business that way. But so he's out there doing that. So my first step is, once I get this wholesale thing back to where I want it to be, I'm going to launch that again. I was doing that for a little while, but I just decided to stop doing it because I just wasn't doing it at a scale that was really, because that, we talked about the huge margin in books. The stuff he does not have huge margins, but it just turns like crazy. So you really got to be putting money into it to be getting good money out of it. So once I have that in place, I want to get that rolling. And then actually, Andrew, you'll kind of like this, because we had a meeting last week where there was a lot of conversation about like reaching out to potential clients, setting up funnels and things like that to bring clients in. And what I would like to do then is build a sales funnel type thing that brings people in that are interested in Amazon, and then to sit down and be able to have a call with them and say, okay, these are the avenues that we have available for people to build Amazon. You can, if you want to do it a little bit on the cheaper side, less capital intake, we could put you over here in this book program. If you want to go all out right away and you don't want to deal with any physical inventory, nothing, then we'd probably recommend that you slide over into this wholesale side of things and just kind of, and then I would figure out some way that I would just get a little kickback. So if I do send somebody to a wholesale program, the wholesale program would kick me something back for giving them that referral. So that's really far down the line though. So
cool. That did remind me of one last question I have, because I know I had a lot of them on this one. Over the last, you say I've been doing this for a couple of years now, really full-time the last 2 years. Have you seen physical book sales decline as we've seen the rise in audiobooks and podcasting and stuff like that?
No, not at all. And if you really want to, and I'll be honest with you, like, it's hard for me to tell on the CD side, because for so much of the time I'm always growing. So I now have never seen a decrease in sales on CDs even. And which I think we can all agree here that most of us would consider an audio CD to be a dead medium. Like, it's just not in existence anymore.
Yeah.
But I mean,
most laptops don't even have CD players. Like, my car doesn't have it. My computer, someone gave me a DVD, probably 6 months ago, and I literally have no device that can play it. So it's sat in the case.
So, and with that, if I ever did see a decrease in sales, I wouldn't even equate it though to,
sure,
to the medium dying. Generally in the Amazon world, I would just see that as oversaturation.
Sure.
So it's really hard, because, you know, you could look up like sales statistics and you could see that this stuff is falling through the floor. But from my perspective, I don't see it at all, because it feels more like it's just oversaturation in the market. And,
sure,
and, you know, my growth might have absorbed some of those decrease in sales.
Right. But so, I know some specific markets, you know, like in for education, my school, you know, we started to go to a lot more ebooks than we did physical books. But it depends on the, you know, the type of, even that program, you know, medical programs still deal with a lot of physical textbooks versus ebooks. And, you know, and it's a, you know, I have a full shelf of books, right? So, I mean, I love physical books. I hate e-readers, but I love audiobooks because I can listen to them while I'm mowing the lawn or doing something else, you know. So it just depends on the book too. So,
and I can tell you that book you just sold up, that's one of those books that has absolutely zero, no value on Amazon.
Oh, 100%. I think I bought this one on 8 books for like $3.
So. Yeah. So
it has profit if you are the one that has a million of them in inventory.
Yes. And then you can make like 75 cents off of each copy, because that book will sell like crazy.
Right.
You're just not going to make money off of it. Right. So,
Eric, when you walk into someone's house and they have a bunch of books, do you just see money pasted on the wall? Or?
No, not really. But I do find it funny. So I have a friend that does a little bit of book selling. So the other week we were hanging out, and for whatever reason, we found ourselves in a Half Price Books. So he immediately decided he was going to start bookshopping. And I'm like, oh, this is fun. I can test, because I don't bookshop per se anymore. Like, I haven't in like 7 years. So I'm like, let's see if I still got it. So like, I went up to the racks and I started, okay, scan this book. And I was proud to say that after the third book, I found him a $70 book. And I was like, wow. Yes. So, nice. So nice. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we are getting close to time here, but if there's any other questions or conversation, we have a little bit of time. But overall, Eric, it's really fun to catch up on your business. Great work through 2021. Also, Tracy, awesome work on the logo, the hippie logo, as you said. it's a great, great logo. I love it. I will say, I love businesses like yours, Eric, that you don't necessarily like need a logo even, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, it's nice to have one, but, you know, like those kind of businesses, like, you know, manufacturing companies that make products for big brands, you know, like you don't even know these companies, you wouldn't ever need to know their logo. But that seems to be like, you know, that's the business to be in. Like you're not customer necessarily facing or consumer facing. But regardless, the logo is nice to see at a 1 million cups meeting, and you did a great job on it, Tracy. Nice work. Yeah. Any other questions or comments for Eric today?
I have a question for the audience.
Oh,
how does everybody feel about having a company revisited on 1 million cups? Was it a positive experience? Would you rather just hear from new companies?
It's awesome.
Well, I'm new, so I had not heard of it before. So my answer is null and void. But I think it's, especially if it's a local company, I think it's fun to get updates on them. And so I may present here in the future, but I work in finance. So I work one-on-one with a lot of people. And so be able to network and hear updates, even if it's every 6 months, 9 months, of what other local businesses are doing. Because obviously we don't interact with everyone all the time. So I think it's fun just to hear those updates.
Cool. I love it. It's a great read. Like Tyler said, he's new. So, you know, we might have people that do know your business and are excited to see like your journey, your continued journey, but also, you know, new exposure to people who might not, you know, might see you every week, Eric, but not know what you do.
I'm the silent guy that everybody's like, what does he do?
Yeah.
Everybody knows Andrew. And then I sit over here and they're like, what does that guy do besides stream stuff to Facebook for
Andrew? Very important. Very important guy. Anyways. Yeah. So I think it's great. And it sounds like the crowd seems to like it as well. So, we'll have to like knock on some doors and, get some other updates here.
Thanks for listening to this week's speaker. And thank you for your continued support of 1 million cups and our community of entrepreneurs.